yay, oh yay, oh yay. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and its Honorable Court. Be seated, please. Case number 06-98 et al. United Electrical School Contractors Association et al.
First, we're sorry you had the delay this morning. It was not something that the court intended. People greatly overestimate the authority of federal judges. We cannot, for example, do anything about traffic. One or more of the judges on the court today was caught in a traffic situation. So we apologize to our counsel. That will not be taken off your time. You may proceed.
If it may please the court, my name is Stephen Goodman. I am the attorney for the United Electrical Contractors Association and for those employers who are members of the United Contractors Association. I'm here this morning, Your Honors, to urge you not to enforce the National Labor Relations Board's order in this case. The board's decision is not based on substantial evidence, and the board's remedy does nothing to effectuate any of the purposes of the National Labor Relations Act. The board's decision in this case is based on the fact that the board found that the union, during the course of 4 years of negotiations, bargained in good faith, and thus the association's defense that the bargaining was in bad faith and that it was privileged to withdraw from the bargaining was not substantiated. I believe if you look at the facts of the case, I think the facts amply demonstrate that the union bargained in bad faith both away from the bargaining table and at the bargaining table. Away from the table, the union entered into numerous interim agreements, agreements which do not meet the standards of banana linen, which resulted in the employers who signed these agreements leaving the association, no longer supporting the association, and no longer supporting the association's efforts to bargain collectively with the union. These agreements required that these employers join a different association, be bound by that association and the negotiations that that association was engaged in to pay pension welfare payments on behalf of their employees to pension and welfare funds that were not under the association, and to also be bound by work sharing programs and union hiring hall that eventually would end up replacing the employees who had worked under the association and the association contract for many years with employees who had worked for many years under Local 3 contracts. Under these circumstances, these interim agreements could not be said to maintain the interest and the allegiance of the employers who signed them to the negotiations with the UEC. And in fact, they did not. That was only one example of the union's bad faith bargaining. The negotiations lasted for 4 years. During the entire 4 year period, the union presented one proposal which it then withdrew from negotiations. The board excuses that by saying that the union was then working off the proposals that were initiated by the association. But in the last 2 years of bargaining, the union presented no proposals and no counterproposals. And I tell you, Your Honors, it's not possible to advance negotiations when one side makes no proposals and makes no counterproposals.
Well, I don't see why that would be true at all. I've never been a labor negotiator, not on this level. But I've negotiated an awful lot of things in life, and I see no reason why it isn't perfectly possible to work off the draft proposed by one side or the other in negotiations. It's done all the time in other contexts.
I agree with you, Your Honor.
I don't see what the probity is of that. As I read the findings, the union did put forth a proposal. Management put forth one. The union said, all right, we'll work in your draft. I don't see how that is any evidence of bad faith bargaining.
Well, the
I read your brief, and what you recite as happening is consistent with the findings, but the short question is, so what?
Well, as I was saying, Your Honor, one can work off a proposal that's presented by one party, but the way one works off a proposal in negotiations is one party presents the proposal, and then the other party would say what it didn't like in the proposal and what it would want to have changed.
But didn't the findings reflect that the union had filed short responses to various parts of it and engaged in conversation, if you would, or dialogue concerning those parts at least?
Well, I know that the judge said that the union presented short one or two page written proposals, and that was picked up by the board. In actuality, that was testified to by the union agent. It was disputed by the association's agent.
We're not here to hear about disputed evidence. We're here on findings.
Well,
we don't take it. This court wouldn't recognize the evidence you brought it in here and shook it for us. We're here to review findings of
The alleged written proposals were never presented into evidence.
That may have been a very good argument for a best evidence rule proceeding on the part of the trier of fact, but we're not triers of fact.
Well,
you're stuck with the findings that have been made.
I understand.
You've already admitted within the last minute and a half that there was evidence for those findings, and I don't see where you think you're going with that.
Well, you'd state that even assuming that these proposals were admitted into evidence, without the proposals themselves, nobody could ever judge whether the proposals had anything to do with the negotiations, advanced the negotiations, or even a response to what had been presented earlier.
Did you have the burden of showing bad faith bargaining on the part of the union?
Yes.
Did you not have that burden?
Yes.
So again, I don't see where you're going with the statement you just made.
No. The union engaged in.
Are there any cases holding an employer's view of a union's bargaining as being in bad faith justifies withdrawal of recognition?
I believe there are cases that the board has had. In fact, I think one was the Chicago newspaper case. They were in our brief, where the board held that union bad faith bargaining would allow the employer to cease bargaining.
Now, the board says we've never decided that.
You
think what is it, the Chicago case decides?
Yeah, I believe it's the Chicago Tribune case, Your Honor. Turning us away briefly from the conduct of the union at the bargaining table and away from the bargaining table, we believe that the remedy that the board seeks to impose in this case is contrary to the purposes of the National Labor Relations Act and does not effectuate the act. The act is supposed to provide for labor stability and for the protection of employees' Section 7 rights, and I believe that the remedy here, ordering this association to go back and bargain on behalf of a certified unit of 91 employers, does nothing to effectuate either of those purposes of the act. In 1994, 1995, and 1998, and before the administrative law judge, the association stated and proved that it could not gained the cooperation of a vast majority of the employers that were members of the association to aid in the negotiations. We could not get basic information that the union was entitled to give to them. there's nothing that would indicate that we'd be able to do anything differently now. In fact, since the negotiations began, the interim agreements have reduced the cooperation of the cooperating employers significantly, so that it's every reason to believe that we'd be able to provide less information to the union this time than we were able to do in 1994 and 1995. With respect to the employees, the negotiations began here in 1995. It's now 13 years later. The employees have not had the benefit of a collective bargaining agreement. They have not had the benefit of any changes in terms and conditions of employment. Attempts by the association and the association members to change some of the terms and conditions of employment of the employees were rebuffed by the union during the course of the negotiations. And I believe that these employees at this point need some sort of a relief from endless negotiations. I think.
Well, assuming we get relief on everything but the remedy issue, what do you say the remedy should have been? I know you don't want to assume that, but we're going to skip over what you don't want to assume.
All right. In 1998, when the association withdrew from the negotiations, it advised the union that it should seek to bargain individually with those employers who were willing to negotiate and to try to seek individual agreements with them. And for those employers who didn't want to cooperate, the union could take that matter up with the National Labor Relations Board and have a better attempt.
Now, are you coming to my question?
I am coming to your question. So at that time, my remedy was that the union should be bargaining with the individual employers and not through the association and not through an association-wide bargaining unit. It's now almost 10 years since.
You're sneaking up on my question from a great distance. Assuming you lose on everything on the merits, what do you say, but you're still arguing that the remedy is erroneous. What do you say the remedy should be? Now, I know you don't want to make that assumption, but I'm requiring you to make that assumption.
Yes.
And what do you say the remedy should be?
I think the remedy should be, Your Honor, that the court deny the board's order and that the union should have to demonstrate that it represents these employees at this time.
So there would be no remedy against the petitioner here?
Yes.
I've already had you assume that you lose on the merits, and I asked you what the remedy should be that the board should impose based on your having lost on the merits, and you told me what the board ought to do to other people. You're saying that the board should simply make a finding, leave it hanging in the air, that your client has committed unfair labor practices and enter no remedy against your client?
Well, I think the remedy, well, I'm not saying that there should be no remedy. Certainly, the board has other means by which to remedy bad faith bargaining, but I do think that a bargaining order against the association in this and under these circumstances is not appropriate.
Well, I think Judge Hentel was asking what is appropriate.
Yeah.
I think there are several things that could be appropriate. Well, one could be that the individual employers be required to bargain with the union on an individual basis. Another remedy could be.
Would that be a bargaining order against the individual companies or?
Against the individual employers, yes.
A bargaining order could be entered, but not against the association.
Well, I think it's fruitless to enter a bargaining order with the association.
You are not opposing the entry of bargaining orders as to individual members of the association.
As the representative of the association, I'm not. As the representative of some of the members of the association, I would argue that their employers have suffered through this negotiation process for 13 years.
How can you enter a bargaining order against the individual members?
Well, my understanding.
They didn't refuse to bargain in bad, or they didn't withdraw recognition. It's the association that withdrew recognition. They're not guilty of any unfair labor practice, with the possible exception of an expert, which we'll hear from in the next case.
My understanding was that the certification ran to the individual employers as well.
Does the finding of unfair labor practice run to the individual employers as well, or only as to the party to the litigation? The suggestion is that they're not before us for remedy, that not, we're not before the board for remedy, the individuals qua individual companies, but only the association qua association.
Well, Your Honors, I can only reiterate that a remedy ordering the association to bargain on behalf of the entire association would be fruitless.
But possibly, you seem to be saying that the board can find, that even if the board finds the association guilty of unfair labor practices, it can't do anything.
Well, I think
not giving us any remedy that you say would be appropriate
against
the association if it... if we uphold the findings and conclusions as to the commission of the ULP.
Well, again, I think there's remedies other than a bargaining order.
And I asked you to name one.
To date, we have had no
answer to that except to say, well, they should have done something to somebody else.
Well, the board has one, which was a cease and desist order. I mean, there's not only a bargaining order, but there's a cease and desist order, right?
Yes.
Cease and desist from refusing to bargain. Right. And the difference between those is?
A cease and desist,
decertification.
Well,
if you have a bargaining order, you can't get, you can't decertify, the employees couldn't file a decertification petition for years.
In due respect, the employees here cannot file a decertification under any circumstances. The unit is too large.
They are not legally precluded from filing such a petition. If there's a cease and desist order in, they are legally precluded if there's a bargaining order in. Is that not correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, how large is the, how many employees covered?
Originally, I believe that there were something close to approximately 900 employees in the original bargaining unit. I believe in the present members of the association, there are approximately 250 or so members of the bargaining unit members.
It's not simply that it's large, it's so diffuse, that's the problem.
Well, there are a lot of employers.
Yeah.
There are a lot of employers.
It's not really a particularly large bargaining unit, it's just that it's so diffuse. I mean, there are lots of bargaining units that are not usually under this many employers.
Yes, but the employers are scattered throughout the New York metropolitan area, and again, any decertification in the bargaining unit found by the board would be almost an impossibility, practically speaking.
Yeah, I think we've used up your time between us. We'll give you back 2 minutes for rebuttal if you need it after the
thank you, Your Honor.
Presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Worsha Deenan. I represent the board which seeks enforcement of its orders in this case. In this case, it's undisputed that the association unilaterally terminated bargaining and withdrew recognition from the union in the certified multi-employer unit after negotiations began without union consent. Despite that fact, the association blames the breakdown of negotiations on the union. The association asserts two main defenses that unusual circumstances justified its withdrawal. First, that the interim agreements obtained by the union with 19 employers fragmented the unit, and second, that the union bargained in bad faith. The unusual circumstances exception to retail associates, however, is limited to the most extreme situations, and here the board reasonably found that the association failed to show that these facts warranted an expansion of that exception. Turning first to the interim agreements, interim agreements are a permissible economic weapon for a union, and in this case, by the text of those agreements, they were to be superseded by the association agreement. So the board was justified in finding that the multi-employer unit was not substantially fragmented because all of the employers retained a vested interest in the outcome of association negotiations. Turning next to the argument pertaining to the union's bargaining conduct, even if proved, Bad faith bargaining by a union is not an established defense to withdrawal from multi-employer bargaining.
Well, you say that, and Mr. Goodman says that the Chicago Tribune case stands for the opposite proposition. And the administrative law judge, in fact, said, the board has held that a union's bad faith bargaining may, in certain circumstances, excuse an employer's refusal to bargain. Citing the same case that Mr. Goodman.
Yes. Chicago Tribune is not a multi-employer bargaining context case. That's
so
an
what?
Individual employer context.
Why does that matter?
I'm sorry?
Why does that matter?
Because there are different standards for withdrawal in multi-employer context versus individual employer context. And as far as the judge's statement, the board did not rely on that statement. And it specifically disclaimed reliance on that statement. However, in this case, the board
specifically did not rely on what statement?
If you look at the decision in footnote one of the board's decision, it says, we find it unnecessary to rely on the judge's suggestion in his decision that bad faith bargaining may, in certain circumstances, excuse an employer's refusal to bargain. Instead, the board found that on the facts of the case.
I'm not sure how that gets rid of the Chicago Tribune problem that Judge Randolph is asking about.
Well, if you look at the case that we cite, Atlas Transit Mix, the board has said that in the multi-employer context, that it has not decided that bad faith bargaining by a union is an established defense. I mean, most of these cases.
It has not decided that it is an established defense, but if it was decided in the Chicago Tribune that it was as to a single employer, what is the distinction that would prevent it from also being a defense as to a multi-employer?
Well, I mean, as we explain in our brief, the board and courts have placed a special emphasis on stabilizing multi-employer units, and in some sense it's more difficult to withdraw recognition in a multi-employer unit.
Did the board rely on that proposition, or is that post hoc rationalization?
It's, well, I don't think it's a post hoc rationalization.
Convince me that it's not.
I'm sorry?
Go ahead, convince me.
I'll do my best, Your Honor.
If you don't think it is, it doesn't help you a lot.
Well, relying on, again, that footnote, you know, the board specifically says that it did not reach that issue of whether this is a valid defense. The board instead decided on the facts of this case that the union did not fail to bargain in good faith.
Okay. So the reliance of the board is that there was not a failure to bargain in good faith on the part of the union, rather than on the proposition that if there is bad faith, that is not a defense to withdrawal.
Yes, that's true. However, given that it's the association's burden to prove this defense, it has no authority showing that the board has ever accepted that as a defense. However, on the factual issue, the relevant inquiry is whether the union had a sincere intent to reach an agreement. And in this case, the union was bargaining for its initial contract, so unless it reached an agreement, it would have nothing. And with respect to the association's arguments about specific topics of bargaining, the board is not to stand in judgment on substantive topics of bargaining. And moreover, a union is, just as an association is entitled to hold firm to its positions and was not required to agree to any particular proposal offered by the association. If I could just turn to the remedy, if there's no other questions. On that, the association's main argument is that the bargaining order is impractical or unworkable because it believes that its members will not cooperate if bargaining resumes. However, the board's position is whether or not all employers participate, all employers will be bound by that contract, and employers who choose not to participate do so against their own best interest. What UCA is required to do is bargain to an agreement or impasse with the union. So UCA must bargain based on the input of those employers that do participate. And with respect to its argument that 85% of its employers have left the association or are no longer active. There's no evidence in the record to support those numbers, and there's no evidence to show what happened to these employers. If these employers have just chosen that they don't want to participate in the association, they can't simply leave without the union's consent. So whether they're active or not is irrelevant to the analysis.
Where is there any indication that the board took into account the employee's Section 7 rights in issuing the bargaining?
The board considered employees' Section 7 rights and declining to extend the certification year. Instead, they've only ordered bargaining for a reasonable period of time, after which the unions may, if they, the employees, if they choose to, may oust the union. So bargaining, they don't have to bargain for an entire year before employees have their right to decertify.
Well, it's usually just 6 months to a year anyway, isn't it?
Reasonable period is 6 months to a year. And with respect to the association's suggestion that the board could order individual bargaining or bargaining on the basis of individual employer units, the board cannot do that order because the unit was certified as a multi-employer unit. The employees voted as a whole. So we can't say that the employees of employer one voted for the union versus employer two. They're just not separate units, and the board has never ordered bargaining in other than a certified unit. And the certification runs against the association, not the individual employers.
The cases in this circuit that have caused some tension between the board and the court and bargaining order situations are where we have rejected the board's remedy of a bargaining order. I haven't gone back, but are all those cases in which the employees didn't vote for the union?
You mean in a non-incumbent, in a situation right, where it's a remedy for election violations?
That's a good way to put it, yeah.
Yeah. There are a couple of cases.
Vincent is one case, is it not, where that was not the case?
I don't recall if Vincent was.
Was an incumbent union.
I don't remember. I do remember that there was
no indication of employee dissatisfaction that a majority of the employees would want the union decertified, right?
Other than the employees of the one employer expert.
Well, expert. But
yeah, but other than that, no. There's
900 in the unit. And
right.
Nine people sign a petition. That doesn't get
right.
you there.
No, there's no evidence that any of the employees are unhappy with the union.
I'm not sure if there's a waiver, but petitioners did not argue the Vincent Electric theory below, did they?
Now, I don't recall that they cited that.
They didn't argue Section 7
rights either,
did they?
Right. Yeah.
Well, in their brief to the court, they have, but before the board, they did not. And I would submit that to the extent that the association is trying to champion the rights of these employees who haven't had a contract for this long, it's the association that stopped bargaining. It's not the union.
That's always going to be the case in these bargaining orders. Right?
Well, that's true. And then that's, you know, while we cited Supreme Court language citing that it's reasonable to be skeptical of that.
That's just a way of stating that you disagree with some of the case law from this court, which requires justification of bargaining orders.
That's true. The court has required that.
Usually in the context of non-incumbent.
Usually, yes.
In other words, where the most of the cases have been where the employees never voted to have a union, and because of some unfair labor practice committed by the employer, the board took away the Section 7 rights of the employees. That was the usual context.
Yes, that's the usual concern, is to impose a union on employees that have not voted for it.
Yeah.
Unless there are any other questions, we'll rest on our brief.
Seeing none, Counselor, you are out of time. We'll give you back 2 minutes for a vote. If you want, you don't have to take it. We don't impose 2 minutes on the board with unions.
I certainly don't think I'm going to take 2 minutes. I just have a few comments about what the board said, where the board says that the union would have nothing if it failed to have an agreement. Actually, the facts don't substantiate that. The unions already entered into new contracts with 20 or so of the employers in these interim agreements, whereby the union has obtained exactly what they could not obtain from the association, which is the adherence to the NYCRA agreement, which the union proposed to the association and which the association rejected. Also, I think the board's change of the bargaining to a reasonable period from a one-year period, again, does very little here, because this association, if required to go back and bargain on behalf of the certified unit, will never be able to bargain in good faith from the first day that they meet, because it will simply be a matter of the union requesting information from all employer members of the certified bargaining unit, and the association will simply not be able to comply with those requests. Finally, with respect to the board's certification, I think the board has the authority to police their certifications and make sure that their certifications work. And in this situation, a certification can't work no matter what the association
does. Just one question before you leave us. Did the petitioner preserve the Section 7 argument below?
Yeah, I believe we did, sir, because I believe, Your Honor, that we objected to the ALJ's...
You made a general objection to the ALJ's entry of remedy, but at the board level, did you make an objection to the bargaining order on the basis of the Section 7?
I believe in our brief that there was a mention that the Section 7 rights of the employees would not be taken into consideration with the implementation of a bargaining order.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Case is submitted. Call the next case.